무저진진미묘허약구센만거난서구 가건켄먼토쿠주지 강계뇨라의신짓수기.
So I've been doing a series on the Buddha's teachings, what the Buddha actually taught, and the Zen perspective on that. Today I'm going to step outside that, though actually, interesting enough, there's some of it that does connect directly with that, to look at Jean's legacy. And of course this is a personal view. I need to say that, you know, it's based on what I remember and what touched me, and different people will be touched by different things, of course. And so, you know, I want to just recognise that and acknowledge that. So this is what the memories that stayed with me most deeply. And I was speaking with Ilse yesterday, and she came up with something which had really touched her. And it was something that wasn't really in my memory. You know, so different people have different things that touch them. But I'll try to just say a little bit about the things that left an impression on me. So the first thing, of course, is that as an authentic teacher in the Soto Zen tradition, Jean was firmly committed to the practice of Zazen. Yeah, he would often make comments about that. I once said, you know, there's a phrase that's used in Zen, which is Bono, which is the thing that draws you. And at that time, it's not true now, but I said, oh, my thing is that I want to go travelling all the time. My bono is to travel, and he said, well, mine is Zazen. That's the only thing I want to do. So you know, he had a firm commitment to that, and so he was steady, regular, committed practice was core to what was important to him. And I think that I get the impression from speaking with him on the phone that carried on, though obviously he couldn't do the posture. But he was still, the attitude of mind was something that he was still connected with on a regular basis. And I know that when he went back to France, he would go to the Strasbourg Dojo regularly, would sit in a chair in the Strasbourg Dojo, and then when that was not possible, he would carry on at home. But the other thing to say about that is that he also was clear that if it just becomes a habit without thought, or thought's the wrong word, but if Zen practice just becomes a habit, that's not good. He used an expression once when he was talking to me about an old trucker. He says, you don't want to do Zen like an old trucker just sitting in front of you. I think it's a kind of French expression, but yeah, you don't want to be like an old trucker just sitting in front of his... So you always bring in freshness. So even though you need to have a regular, steady rhythm and habit, always bringing freshness is important. So always connecting with the freshness. And one of the ways to do that, of course, is to be with others. Different people over time. So that's the first thing. And the other thing to say about that, we were talking about Nancy as well, that his attitude to rules in the dojo, the way that you do things in the dojo, he was definitely less strict about rules than, say, Nancy was. And in fact, we would particularly, he had some Swiss students, and these poor Swiss students would get quite frustrated with Jean when they visited us in the UK, and would say, you know, why do you let these Brits be so lax, sort of thing. But for Jean, what was most important, it was the spirit of it. The spirit was more important than the form. Didn't mean he didn't care about the form. It just meant that he was quite happy to sacrifice the form if he felt that the spirit would benefit from it. So you would compromise depending on what the room was like and that sort of thing. He was, rather than trying to force some ideal version of how it should be. So that's the steady, regular practice, but always with freshness. And discipline in the dojo, but discipline is secondary to the spirit. So I shouldn't say that, it's slightly different. So he was firmly a believer in discipline in the dojo, but the thing was, I think he felt that sometimes people got so hung up on following the rules that they lost the spirit. I think that's a better way of putting it. And so he would let the rules slide a bit if he felt that supported the spirit. The one thing that, and this relates directly to what I would have taught anyway today if Jean, if I wasn't doing about Jean, one of his favourite phrases from the Buddha's teachings, and it was the, what I was going to teach today anyway, was be unto yourself your own lamp. And it was what the Buddha said on his deathbed. And that was something that Jean often quoted. The Buddha's final teaching was be unto yourself your own lamp. And it's something, so he often said that. He said that as he was leaving us, when he left us in the UK to go back to France. That was something that, that he was... but to be clear about what he meant, because sometimes this can be interpreted as meaning... so it was definitely the Buddha was talking about our own teacher within us. That was definitely what the Buddha was referring to, and that's what Jean was referring to. It's definitely about our own teacher within us. But that's often misinterpreted as meaning I decide what is best for me, if you see what I mean. That's not quite what the Buddha meant, and that's not what Jean meant when he was talking about in that. In that, of course, Jean was a great believer in the importance of the master-disciple, the teacher-student relationship, as was the Buddha. So it's not deciding what's best for yourself egoically. It doesn't mean that you don't put yourself in front of a teacher and hear what the teacher has to say. But the teacher's role is to create the conditions where each of us can look unflinchingly within us and not take responsibility away from us. That's the job of the teacher. So it's not about us putting our own, you know, all responsibility on the teacher to sort us out. It's about the teacher creating conditions where we can look within ourselves in an unflinching way, observe the play of our own ego, observe the unfolding of our life, and that's what it's about. So unflinchingly observe the games that our ego plays within us. So when the Buddha said, be unto yourself your own lamp, that was part of what he meant. The other part of what he meant was, don't take the teachings as dogma. See the teachings, and this is related to what I've just said, but see, don't just trust the Buddha's words because some great person said them. See the teachings at play inside your own mind and verify them in that way. They're not verified because some great person said them. They're verified by you seeing them in your own mind at play and see how the suffering arises, see how the mistakes you make, and see how they reflect what the Buddha observed himself. So you must discover for yourself what the Buddha observed. And Jean, I remember, I think it was probably his last session that he led at La Gendronnière, the temple in France. I think he was getting a bit irritated with some of the older disciples pontificating around the place. I'm not entirely sure what, but I think, and he said, it's very easy to say the way, it's very easy for an older disciple to say to a younger disciple, the way is under the steps of your feet. But you must let people discover that for themselves. You can't force them to that realization. So that was as I say, one of his favourite phrases from the Buddha's teaching. Another phrase that he used a lot, particularly at, for instance, the first Gulf War, he talks about this, and there are other times as well, particularly when there was obvious conflict in the world. He used to speak about, and I spoke about this also, I touched on this in the last couple of talks, or one of the talks. One of the phrases of his that really stuck with me is the demon of good. The fact that suffering in the world is rarely created by deliberate acts of evil. So, you know, there are deliberate acts of evil. You know, there is real malice in the world. But far more suffering in the world is created by people who think they know what is good and trying to impose what they believe is good on those other people around them. And that's what Jean called the demon of good. But not only on other people around them, but also on ourselves. We impose our own view of how we should be, how we think a good person is, exactly, rather than living life in the freshness as it is, imposing some view of how we should be, of how other people should be. And so that is the demon of good, and that was something that, again, as I say, a phrase that Jean used quite a bit that stayed with me, partly because I'm, you know, a victim of the demon of good many times myself. So he would say that peace is not an absence of conflict. Peace is something that we must each look for inside ourselves. And I was rereading one of his teachings just over the weekend yesterday. And again, it was at a time of war when he gave the teaching. And he was saying that it's very easy to see the bad in the conflict in others, the conflict that created by others. But what he was saying is that none of us don't have anger and a tendency to conflict inside ourselves. And so he was saying, you know, even if it never expresses itself, observe it within you. Observe. Don't just complain about other people. Though, to give him his due, Jean would complain about people who were, you know, did things unnecessarily. You know, people who were violent in the world, etc. He wasn't someone who would just say, oh, well, that's all right, that's not my problem. He said, in the end, it's our own hearts that we can work with, our own hearts and minds we can work with most. And so we must look for the conflict that we have within us and work on that, and that will spread out. So that's another one, which is kind of connected to that, and one way that the demon of good manifests itself in ourselves, which Jean was very clear about. Again, it's something because it's something that he had worked with through his life, was ambition. The fact that there's different things that pull different people, and something that certainly affects me, and also Jean was quite candid that it affects him, is ambition in the world, the desire to have an impact in the world, to do something in the world. And he said, you know, ambition is not a good thing, and the worst form of ambition of all is spiritual ambition, which means the ambition to be some great spiritual teacher. That was, yeah, he said that's the worst form of all. That doesn't mean that you suppress it if you have it. I actually asked him, okay, if you experience spiritual ambition, what should one do? And his answer was that you should observe it, keep an eye on it, watch the trouble it gets you into, and over time that will transform it. And his phrase was, okay, you don't want to be a great person, you want to be adequate. In life, we must be adequate. basically, because from Jean's point of view, ordinariness and simplicity are beyond greatness. And this very much links in with what Dogen said as well. So leading a simple and ordinary life is beyond greatness. And there was a poem I remember him using in teaching, one of the very first sessions, probably the first session I went on with him, which was at a, I can't remember if you were there or not, but it was in Manchester. It was a really shabby sports centre, very smelly because all the sports equipment. Were you there for that one?
Yes.
There's it, yeah. I haven't been able to find this poem. I don't. I looked in the past for it, but basically it was a poem which told the story. It's a Chinese poem, and it starts off with the simple man who just simply sows his seeds, etc., and says the simple man aspires to be the master of the field or something like that. And then the master of the field, then the master of the field aspires to be the lord of their emotions, and the lord of the emotions aspires, I can't remember exactly, but I'll give you this in spirit, the lord of emotions aspires to be the lord of the mind. And it goes on like this, and it says, and then I can't remember what you know, and then it says, the lord of something or other aspires to be the simple man once more. And so it was kind of this sense that coming back to simplicity, it doesn't mean that you deny the intellect on these other things, but it means that trying to return to simplicity, finding simplicity once more, simplicity and ordinariness rather than the game of ambition that life pushes into. And okay, this is a direct quote from him, which I found. If we're able to do the little things with sincerity, with the spirit of mushotoku, which means non-attachment, then the big things will take care of themselves. So doing the little things with sincerity was profoundly important to him. And then also, so again, linking back to this idea of simplicity and the mind. So Jean was certainly an intellectual. You know, he loved to read kind of very broad, you know, very eclectic. He was certainly a reader and an intellectual. For him, you know, that again was a game and wasn't the most important thing. So again, this is a direct quote from him. actually, not quite, this is my memory of what he said, but I remember there was a student who asked him about learning all the Buddhist sutras and things, studying Buddhism. And John, he would study Buddhism, but he would study many other things as well. He was very much a broad reader. John said, knowledge is good. In fact, it is a kind of wealth, and wealth is a nice thing to have. But fundamentally, the practice of Zen, the practice of Buddhism, is ultimately not about getting wealth. So basically, because, again, somewhere else he said, knowledge does not bring an end to suffering. Yeah, it can shine a light in places, but knowledge, fundamentally, knowing this stuff does not bring an end to suffering. The only thing that brings an end to suffering is immersing yourself in practice and being truly present in the moment. Another thing is, of course, because Jean lived to be almost 91 years old, he had been, for someone who, I think, for anyone who lives that long, you become aware of mortality. I mean, I'm beginning to get, as someone in my 40s, you start to become aware of it, you know, whereas when you're in your 20s, it's just, you're just convinced you're going to live forever, despite all evidence to the contrary. So Jean is someone, as with many people who are who lived with awareness of close mortality. Two of his wives, you know, his two wives died of cancer with him there, his first wife and then Nancy. They both died of cancer. His son died of cancer before he died, about 3-4 years ago. You know, so he's someone who was long aware of mortality. And so, of course, it's something he gave a lot of thought to. And he said at a retreat that someone asked him about death, and he often quoted Master Deshimaru's quote about Zazen. He said that Master Deshimaru would say that practicing Zazen is preparing you to enter your coffin, is what he said. So the act of practicing Zazen is preparing you to enter your coffin. I can't remember the exact phrase, but something like that. And so people would ask him about death, of course. And one time when he was asked this, he said, they asked effectively what lives on after death, what lives on after death. And what Jean said in reply is that what will remain of us is what we have chosen to give away fully and definitively. So what remains of us after death is what we choose to give away rather than what we keep for ourselves. And because very much for Jean, he was a great believer in giving and service. For him, and also through his teaching, he said, true happiness comes from giving away courageously, having the courage to give. And of course, we're not talking about material things. The material things are a good thing to give at times, but it's really more about giving of the spirit, giving of your heart to others. And what remains of you after death is what you have the courage to give away fully and deeply to others around you. And so for Jean, happiness comes through giving and serving those around you. And that for me is an important part of the teaching that he left. But I would also say, in the end, what most profoundly affected me about my time with Jean was not the words that he said, even though they were very deep and very powerful and helpful, but his presence. So if you are, so you know, those of you who have been in this room, who've met him over time, know that his simple way of being was in itself inspirational, because he, when I was talking about this business about aspiring to be a simple person, going beyond greatness, many people say things like that, but the thing about Jean is that there really was a sense that at a deep level he had nothing to prove, he simply was. He was someone who lived through being rather than doing lots, you see what I mean? And so simply his simple presence was very powerful, and being just simply in his presence, I'm not talking about some kind of profound thing where, you know, some cosmic vibe goes, but simply seeing him live life simply was powerful. And so for that for me was what made him my teacher at that time. Yeah, that simplicity of being and doing, quietly, not with some great fanfare, not trying to be some great guru, but simply being and doing and living quietly, serving others, giving people space, including Nancy as well. He gave Nancy space because Nancy was his student, effectively, initially. He was the head of Strasbourg Dojo when she arrived. And so, you know, giving space for other people to develop, being a quiet presence, not trying to be some kind of great master. And that was very much inspirational for me. So, thank you for listening.
Shigo Segan Mo'o.